Yeah, go ahead.
This is a discussion, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's general discussion. Actually, let me mention something. So this is a very diverse audience. Some are very theory, some are very data-oriented. So also, if theories, don't feel ashamed if there's something you didn't understand in terms of p-values and SNRs and so on. So just, this is also a chance for you to ask.
Yeah,
yeah, since you mentioned p-values so much,
yes,
there is a whole discussion, and in fact, people at data-rich environments like
yeah.
the LHC, they want to exclude the use of p-values
okay.
completely because of reasons. I mean, there's huge discussions about that.
Okay.
So please be aware of that. And the best way is to consult with these people who have experience of years dealing with huge amounts of data to warn you about the possible
yes.
mistakes that they already did
yes.
and will do.
Yes, one of the main things that you have to guard about in that context is not seeing that the p-value, 1 minus the p-value, is the probability you found something interesting. And I think that's a very natural...
Because of the prior defense.
And also because you don't know all the other possibilities. You haven't enumerated necessarily all the other possibilities.
So, good point. So
I'd like to comment on a couple of issues. The first is, I think it's very relevant and important that you guys develop model-independent strategies, because I'm afraid we're all very... Well, we all have our prejudices. And so actually related to this, there's echo type signals from a variety of other situations. For example, if you add structure outside the light ring, I think Aaron is going to kind of discuss the detail of how you get this mathematically, and it will become obvious that whenever you have structure in defective potential, you're going to have a new scale, and therefore you're going to have a new kind of late time behavior. In fact, with Enrico and Paolo, we first found echoes, not in this context, but when we were studying effects of galactic matter outside the horizon. So whenever you have a lot of structure outside the light ring, you also get echo-like things. You get echoes, actually, from lensing. Gravitational lensing could look like echoes. Of course, the good difference for all of us, well, at least for those doing the searches, is that the time scales are very different. So you go from milliseconds or seconds to years or months. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. But also, if you have couplings, even if you have just pure Schwarzschild geometry everywhere, it's an horizon and so on, even if you have strange couplings to matter that somehow turn on at some scale, either very close to the horizon, very far from the horizon, for instance, like in these screening mechanisms, you're bound to have this stuff. So I think it's... I think you don't necessarily need to think about this as near horizon.
Speaking of that, I think Jun Zhang is one of the postdocs here. He actually just put out a paper that gravitons become massive close to the horizon. There's a good reason for any massive gravity. They could give you echoes.
Yes. Yeah. And so my final comment, I think
you can
sit
down if you want, but
So I think that there's a difference between different types of structure. If it's close to the horizon, this is going to give you longer echoes because the dependence is going to be logarithmic, whereas in the other case, it's going
that's
to be
right.
power
so
loss, it's shorter echo.
That's right.
So that's a way of
distinguishing. Right. But I'm just trying to encourage people to do the search because it's not as far-fetched as one might think. And if you don't look for them, you certainly don't find this stuff. But the other comment was, I think Archisman was asking, if we expect pre-merger effects, and besides what Paolo was saying, which are, I would say, perturbative kind of things, the tidal effects, tidal heating, and so on. I mean, if you have structure, again, you can have resonance during the in-spiral stage. It's probably at a lower frequency, and if it's equal mass, you probably don't excite because these are narrow resonances. But still, I think it's good to keep in mind. And finally, I don't know if Avery is going to discuss, but this was also somebody asked the question. I think we really need to go down to the electromagnetic counterparts as well. I mean, is this compatible? To what level?
Of course, I mean, the argument would be that if you have a stuff that is sitting at the horizon, it will absorb electromagnetic. It's more likely to absorb electromagnetic signal than gravitational wave signal because photons interact much more strongly.
It's also much more likely to reflect.
Well,
that's evidence by the fact that we all have ears.
Well, I guess that depends on the prior. I guess they are much more likely to reflect on something, the mirrors, for example, and I guess ordinary things. So the question is, so black holes are extraordinary. And I think if you want to compare reflection of gravitational waves compared to photons, I think gravitational waves are much less likely to reflect compared to photons. I don't know.
The main difference is the wavelength, right? Mm-hmm. The photons are going to be much shorter wavelength.
That's the big difference.
So that's
absolutely a big difference. And I think there will be some discussion tomorrow, maybe some material is arguing that basically for fuzzballs, the difference would be between Hawking temperature, basically Hawking wavelengths, and then much shorter wavelengths.
I just wanted to respond to that. No, Earth reflects gravitational waves in the sense that we're talking about reflection here. Right, reflection in these models is in the perspective of centering your origin at the center of some object with some gravitational field and then sending in a wave packet of gravitational waves. And you're doing a partial waves decomposition of that wave packet, right? Which means that everything reflects out of the object because there's an angular momentum barrier. And that's why anything you replace the black hole with is a reflecting boundary of some kind with some properties. And the only thing that makes these ultra-compact objects interesting from that perspective is, one, the gravitational wave signals are actually going to be appreciable, and two, they might have this other peak we're talking about, this exterior light ring peak, which is not present for Earth. But you send a gravitational wave back in Earth, you center your coordinates like this, you get the same reflections we're talking about here.
It's not a different definition of reflection.
Well, but it's important for when we're talking about reflection in this context, right? That everything reflects gravitational waves from this perspective. It's black holes that are unique.
Yeah, I agree.
So if there is reflection, would you expect to see it from just accreting black holes that we've been seeing for long? Would we expect to see any effect of photons or something reflecting off something close to the horizon?
I'm not sure if he's going to talk about it, but every project they've written papers on this, and they actually look for a reflection signal from accreting black holes, and they don't find it.
Can you? Yeah. Okay. Is that evidence? Well, maybe we'll hear. Is that evidence strong enough to rule out some
of these models? I mean, it comes back. It's a different wavelengths, right? So very different wavelengths.
Well, but you would. I mean, I. So the wavelength discussion, so certainly there's something to be said for looking in the X-rays versus kilometric radiation, but the electromagnetic spectrum is vast, and if really wavelength was the thing that mattered, you'd make kilometric bombs. I mean, you just have very long wavelength radio bombs in every stellar mass system. So I don't think that's actually as important a distinction as you might guess.
I disagree strongly. It's crucial the way.
Can you explain?
Depending on what the motivation is, because much of the motivation for this reflection is the black hole information problem, and this is something that some people have proposed is that a quanta of Hawking radiation don't see the black hole as a smooth place. Maybe quanta of shorter wavelength see it smoothly and experience info like in general relativity.
Yeah, I think we're talking past each other. That's not the distinction. That's not what I meant.
No.
What I meant was that you can have long enough electromagnetic waves.
Yes, so then that would be interesting. This is what people should be focusing on. Because if you don't have a reflecting boundary condition, say for optical or whatever short wavelength that you have, then this doesn't mean that you're ruling out a boundary condition, a reflecting boundary condition for quanta that are relevant for the black hole information problem.
So my question was that if you think that this is the critical distinction, how do I not have 10 kilometer radio waves living in a resonator around every stellar mass black hole that's accreted?
Yes, I mean that's
my kilometric radio wave bomb.
Is that plasma frequency?
It'll be around.
Well, that would be a problem, that's why we
yes.
No, because you'll create a cavity inside the ISCO, which has got very low density, so they'll propagate in there.
Are you saying the density is low enough at 5? Okay, so
as long as they come back from the black hole.
That would be part of the radio background. Right?
Yes.
Is there any way to, there's no way to see that right now? So.
Well, but they would become trapped inside the ISCO because they won't propagate outside that. So you'll have all of this very large.
They don't get trapped in the same way that these echoes don't get trapped. I mean, you're going to get some radiation, some leaking.
Yeah, the energy
is very low on this diagram, so the tunnel probably is very tiny to get out. Is that what you mean?
But the trapping that I'm thinking of isn't gravitational. It's just because it won't be able to propagate. Won't be able to propagate through the high density region surrounding the black hole.
Oh.
Okay. So now you'll be generating this large electromagnetic energy density within the innermost stable circular orbit of your typical black hole. And okay, so I don't know exactly what that looks like, but it sounds extraordinary.
Does that happen for neutron stars?
It doesn't need to be a very large energy density, though. I mean, there could be some energy density there that's slowly leaking, like gravitational wave echoes, but this is also a very low frequency, so I don't think that you will see directly signature of this.
No, why doesn't this happen for neutron stars and other objects that we don't know, well, we don't suspect have horizons? I mean, do you get this trapping in between the surrounding matter and neutron stars?
Well, you get very interesting signals from neutron stars, I guess, but they're very complicated. I'm not disagreeing with you, I'm just saying that there are lots of things that happen around neutron stars, and I don't know if this is one of them.
So Peter, Paolo has some, you had some paper before, you have some like radius dependent density on the plasma, and then you have trapping of this electromagnetic wave near black holes, and
right.
You have super radiance.
Well, yeah, but in that case, it was considered primordial black holes, so they are in the frequency scales with the mass, so it was very different.
But I guess for supermassive black hole, if you have a.
For supermassive, it would be even worse because it's much lower frequency.
But you could do this for stellar mass black holes.
I actually think that the electromagnetic and maybe even neutrinos are a very interesting.
Speaking of neutrinos, one proposal we had was maybe you don't see the electromagnetism because photons are too strongly coupled, but neutrinos are a bit more weakly coupled. So you could actually possibly hope to see neutrinos that are amplified somehow in the.
What about the Pauli exclusion risk?
Yes. Yeah.
What about it?
Well, you can't get more than one neutrino at the same
state.
It's not a problem. There's enough space based there.
Yeah.
But the point is that if you actually get some coherent electromagnetic radiation, it will get emitted through the interaction with matter. And this is something that you should see. So it should put extreme bounds on ideas.
I think my concern is that, of course, accretion physics is very complicated, we still don't understand it. The question is if you add this extra effect onto accretion, is it with something you could actually distinguish as things stand right now?
You should be able to see it. If you see 0.1 solar mass in electromagnetic radiation, additional to stuff that you don't see, so that right, then this is something that they should be able to see.
Right. Okay. So we can come back to that. Oh.
Yeah. So I wanted to go back to the previous question about possible constraints on the compactness through electromagnetic probes. So yesterday I was talking to Ramesh Narayan, and they had this paper earlier this year, which they are considering tidal destruction events close to a supermassive, say, horizonless object, and they put bounds due to the fact that they don't see any Eddington luminosity that should appear because of the material that goes to the surface and produces shocks. But the bounds they put are about, say, with this epsilon parameter, about 10 to minus 4, which is way above the Planck scale. So for a Planck scale object, it would be 10 to minus 46. So they are very, very stringent, but not as stringent as to rule out these models.
Good.
Just from an experimental point of view, I mean, you're mentioning about this EM counterpart for this echo. I mean, what I'm actually expect from like interferometry data? I mean, I think the question to you.
You have a paper about this at any time?
Well, for the echoes, I don't know. If if what you're asking is what is the something like the Van Horizon telescope, what would it see? Well, then we come back to this issue of wavelengths. So if you really think that this happens at all wavelengths, then you could imagine we'll see echoes from flare events. But if you think that you really do have to have wavelengths comparable to the Horizon scale, then I'd have to think hard about that.
Yes. So if you did have a barrier at the black hole and then this other barrier, if you had a rotating black hole, would you get a black hole bomb that you build up a huge amount of density?
Yeah.
All of density, right?
Yeah.
You'll get, well, there are many effects. One is that you'll get instability. So these modes will become unstable because of rotation at the linearized level. They might also be
right.
Non-linear.
So that would rule out a good barrier, at some models, I guess, of a barrier close to the horizon.
Some model of absorption, yes. So
yeah. There
might be some threshold for absorption.
Right.
And the alternative is maybe there are no spinning black holes or long-lasting spinning black holes in the universe, and I mean all the extra observations of spin are wrong for some reason. my good friends, so but there nobody is wrong by 100%.
But Lyot has a few, right?
What is that?
Lyot has a few.
No, not the initial. I mean, yeah. So that is, it's a long-lasting spin, right? So that, is that what you mean? I mean, they may spin down over time, right?
So how then X-ray binaries, low mass X-ray binaries?
But that's not my point. That maybe they're wrong.
Well, many of them point to say almost extreme speed.
Yeah, I said modeling accretion has been a funny. It's not the easiest thing.
And where our momentum conservation is well established.
there is some tension between the X-ray binaries, or at least the high mass X-ray binaries and the LIGO results. The LIGO results seem to be consistent with very low spins for these kind of stellar sized black holes. And the high mass X-ray binaries seem to be sort of consistent with high spins.
But this is a question that I've often had. Why does anybody expect these two populations to be any way similar? I mean,
there's no reason why you would necessarily expect them to be the same.
The X-ray binary, the bears remembering, the X-ray binaries are a very special subset of all black holes, right? Because they're the ones that are they're big enough to be black holes, but they're small enough not to completely obliterate their companion, and they're close enough that they're engaging in Roche-Loeb overflow just now when we're seeing it. Okay. So that's a lot of special selections, and the LIGO events are even more special because they are also merging at the crest. So these are two super special subsets, and so two super special subsets need not have a sit together in the Venn diagram.
So some of the high mass X-ray binaries are potential, you know, in millions of years time, potential LIGO sources. That they would have, you know, high mass stellar components that they make supernova and they
LIGO is
empty. Yeah, millions of years time when LIGO is still running, they will merge and we'll be able to see them in LIGO.
No, but I think Avery mentioned this to me, so I'm just going to repeat what he said a few years ago, is that but the main assumption is the spin measurements that you assume that the spin of the orbit is parallel to the spin of the black hole, but the time scale for alignment is, I think, longer than, I guess, the relative time scale that we have in the problem. So that assumption may be too simplistic, that maybe the spin of the disk and the spin of the hole may not be aligned with each other, basically. And that kind of complicates the interpretation. As far as I know, they don't make basically any correction for that, or this that independently. Is that correct? Or?
Yeah, I don't think they have a good way to measure the inclination of the disk beyond setting it equal to the orbit. I'm trying to guess what would that do. I mean, I think that would drive the spin estimates up because you assume a smaller emission region.
But something that you have to correct for, or at least with another parameter.
But what about the iron line studies?
But I thought there were disagreements with the iron line studies on the...
Well,
and
but the iron line studies in X-ray binaries are really hard, but the iron line studies in AGN are pretty straightforward. It has to do with what the X-ray background is. And there's curvature in the X-ray binary case, but it's all just a power law. In the AGN, so those I thought were pretty convincing, and so then you have, you know, very high spins for a handful of objects there.
Good. So that's an excellent question. I think we should maybe talk more about it on the last day where you're talking about all astrophysical stuff. But let me, so I think it's getting close to lunchtime. Are there any other questions, topic of discussion? Actually, I did have a question for Paolo. You mentioned that photon stars are not quite ruled out with LIGO data.
Well, so with boson stars, it depends a lot on the self-potential, scarce self-potential. The analysis that with Victor and others we did so was to check different models, namely the least compact ones, the medium compactness, and the high compactness one. And for the first two classes, so when they are not that compact, it's easy to tell them apart. And the reason is that the log numbers are pretty big. They are essentially comparable to those of neutron stars. Even if you want to use the quadruple.
But my question is, I mean, the GW1509, I mean, has very, very clean match to the numerical relativity waveforms. So are you saying that there is also a waveform from the boson star that could fit that?
The full parameter ring down, I don't think so. For the reason I was trying to mention in the end, that you might have boson stars that can fit well the spiral part, but then it's very hard for them to form a final boson stars. It could be that you can mimic the full experimental ring down waveform if you have the boson stars initially like 30 solar masses, and then they form a black hole right after the merger.
Okay.
But
nobody has actually shown that.
Yes, essentially we have shown in this last paper. But I mean, even Daigo has shown all events so far by a black hole, that cannot rule out boson stars. I don't like boson stars, but there's no way you're going to rule out.
The question is there a waveform that is consistent with what LIGO sees from boson stars?
The answer is yes, but I don't care. I mean, LIGO could have been seeing black holes. That doesn't mean that he had seen binary boson stars. Or you could have a population of black holes out there and boson stars out there and just happen to be the case that LIGO hasn't seen boson stars.
No, it just could be a striking that you're saying that you do have boson star waveforms that are consistent.
You can make it quite consistent.
Are there boson star waveforms?
Second?
Are there boson star waveforms?
Yeah, so now they are.
Because all the ones
I've
seen,
matched them and done a
second.
People have matched them and shown the match with the
well,
data.
What you can argue is that the match, if you play around this game, that I'm going to make it as compact as I can, then the loss of SNR is so little that it's going to be hard for LIGO to say, oh, these are not boson stars.
Right, but is that something somebody's actually done, or is that something that's just been argued that you could do?
No, we've just shown some waveforms in this work with Carlos Valenzuela, Paolo, Vito Caruso.
And that's matched against the LIGO data.
So we haven't done that, but you can see the waveform, and then say, well, can you put an EOB on top of it, and essentially just reproducing? I mean, you're searching in a small parameter corner, perhaps, because you're trying to make this as compact as possible, but as Paolo was saying, I mean, you could have something that looks very much like planet clusters. But I would argue again very strongly, even though I'm not a fan of boson stars, that LIGO hasn't ruled out anything as far as boson stars, even though every single system out there is supposed to, that LIGO has seen is binary black holes, they cannot say anything about boson.
But that's a very strong point, right? Because I mean, saying making something on paper is one thing, but actually running a full numerical simulation that gives a waveform that's consistent with
no, but here I think we're talking Pasichar. You're assuming that this is what I want to do, that I want to take the gravitational waves from boson stars, match it with the binary black holes, and they say, oh, some of them are consistent with binary black holes. I don't want to do that. I just want to say, I'm extremely happy to say what LIGO has seen so far is binary black holes events, period. It has yet to catch something. How can you rule out something you've never seen?
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's no way LIGO can do that.
But the question is, does the things LIGO see, are those ruled out for being boson stars, or could those?
Right, you could do that, but you wouldn't say you're ruling out boson stars.
Right. I'm trying to understand from what you're saying. Are you saying that what LIGO did see, is that data itself consistent with it being boson stars, or is that data that LIGO saw?
You could make them consistent if you work hard enough. I would say I'm not going to put more than 20. We're 25 cents somewhere here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put 24 more than that. But yeah, okay. That's all.
We don't see black holes. We don't see black holes.
Sure, right. We see
gravitational
waves that are the most consistent with binary black holes.
What about Hawkes' stars?
Oh,
okay. That's wonderful. I think that's a good time to go out to lunch. Just before, so the lunch is going to be on the second floor of the bistro, and I think it's going to be buffet. So we're going to be back here at 2 for Harris Park. And let's thank all the speakers of the morning.